My name is Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. I'm happy to be here tonight because this is my home group and I would have been here regardless. Thank you, Lourdes, for speaking. I thought you did really good. I'm happy that you said something inappropriate. I'm bound to do the same thing. You broke the ice. It's good. So this is my home group. I love being here on Thursday nights. I come by way of Southern California. I grew up in a real good household. That doesn't have much to do with me being an alcoholic. I'm just telling you about who I am. Just a real weird kid when I was growing up. First place I lived in was a mortuary. My dad was a mortician. My dad worked at a mortuary. My mom worked at a cemetery. And the mortuary that my dad worked at was downstairs, and we lived in the apartment upstairs. And so he would just walk downstairs to work every day. And when I was, you know, my sister and I would play games with each other, I would just jump out of caskets and scare her. And, that was how I grew up. And it was great. You know, I could never have any kids over, not because my parents wouldn't allow it, because their parents wouldn't allow it. So it was great. And then, you know, we moved into, like, a real place when I was, like, 6 or 7. And I've been getting into trouble ever since I could walk and talk, you know. And I found out, I've always had asthma, like, my whole life, and I found out, I think when I was 7 or 8 years old, I went to use my inhaler, and I had the idea, if I take, like, 3 or 4 or 5 puffs instead of just one, maybe I can go longer without needing to use my inhaler again. But what actually happened was I took, like, a ton of puffs, and anybody's whoever has, like, done nitrous oxide or, like, huffed duster spray, the same thing happened, right? So just like, wow, wow, wow. You know, the room was spinning around and stuff, and I was so in love, you know? And it was wild because, after that, I mean, I was having to get new inhalers every week. My mom thought I was dying, you know? She was at the pharmacy every other week getting new inhalers for me, and, but it was crazy. But I just loved feeling that way. I loved the womp-womps. I loved when the room spun. The only bad side was that I shook really bad afterwards for like 3 hours. But it was totally worth it, you know? So I've never done like anything good in school. I've always had disciplinary problems. I'm nervous in front of people, and when I get nervous, I say inappropriate things, and I start trying to get you to do things that you wouldn't normally do. I'd like hustle pogs off kids at the playground and stuff, you know? I just was never doing anything good. So we came to Tampa, and it's just really different. You know, we're talking like 3,000 miles away, culture difference and everything like that. So not only did I feel weird all the time, but I was like a weird kid in a weird place. Shortly after that, I started drinking. So the way this went down was on a Friday night after a football game at high school. I was 15 years old, and I was like 5'4". I weighed like 180 pounds, and my voice still hadn't dropped. So I was short, I was fat, and I had a high-pitched voice. I got together with 3 of my buddies after the football game, and there was this kid I was real good friends with. Him and his brother lived in a trailer out in Dover, and it was just him and his older brother who also went to high school there. So neither of them were 18. There was no parents there. They just lived there, and it was great. I mean, we could do absolutely anything at their house. They had a 4-wheeler and like 5 acres of land, so just you name it, we could do it there. So we all went over to his house with a big bottle of Jack Daniels. My experience with drinking up to this point was, I think, like my dad had let me sip his beer once or twice. You know, I didn't have any formal experience with whiskey shooting. We were all there at the table, and I mean, like, I remember it to this day. We had set up a couple shot glasses, we were all going to do this thing together. And the image that I had in my mind was that, you know, we were just going to have fun. I didn't really expect too much else. I had seen my parents, you know, drink and, like, play cards with their friends. There's no one else in my immediate family that drinks with ferocity, so I'd never had any, like, exposure to that. So that's kind of what I thought would happen. So it got to be my turn, and so I picked up the shot glass of whiskey, and like I said, I didn't know how to shoot whiskey, so I just, you know, kind of opened my mouth and poured it into it like I was drinking a Coke or something like that, and it tasted terrible. It just was burning my mouth, and I started making weird faces, and you know, they were laughing at me, other than doing one swallow, I took like 4 or 5 swallows, so it's just burning the hell out of my throat, you know, and I can feel it coming all the way down my chest, and I'm just, like, I want to stress, it physically hurt my body. You know, like if someone had come up and hit me in the face, like it physically hurt my body when I was drinking this whiskey. And but moments later, you know, it felt like I was like a fish who had just found water. You know, like everything was right. I relaxed. You know, I stopped being so jumpy and annoying and stuff. And it, like everything felt right. You know, that I just don't know how else to say it, but everything felt right. And I can't tell you anything more that happened about that night because apparently I drank a whole lot more. The next thing I know is that I woke up the following morning. There was vomit everywhere. I wasn't supposed to stay at that person's house, but I did. And I had, you know, like when you puke the night before and you don't brush your teeth or drink anything else and you wake up the next day and you got puke mouth, you know, and it just feels like your teeth itch, you know, it's just like the nastiest feeling in the world. And I woke up with puke mouth at their house, and I didn't feel too hot, but I just, there was like the allure of the night before, you know, like when that whiskey finally settled in me, was just so intense that the physical pain was not, I mean, like it was the cost of doing business, you know? And there isn't many things that if someone came up and hit me right now that I would say that was okay. You know, that they're just, I don't have that reaction with a lot of things. Where I'm willing to take that kind of a, like pay that kind of a price. And so like it's real tough to get loaded all the time when you're 15, you know, so I just did it when I could do it. And so I was over at that kid's house all the time. And, you know, and I just, when you're running around as a kid doing that kind of stuff, you just get into trouble. I don't think there's really any way to get around it. You just get into trouble. And so I got into a lot of trouble. And, you know, I drank for like 2.5 years. I like just turned 18 and I was in AA and, you know, I didn't make it too far out there. And, but what happened was, is I had picked up some charges and I went to go see this state counselor and, you know, he wanted to talk about stuff before he worked out like what I was going to do as far as community service and this and that and the other thing. And, it was weird because I got arrested for a marijuana charge, right? Had nothing to do physically with alcohol. And but that was all he asked me about was alcohol-related stuff, you know, how much you drank, you know, all this stuff. And everybody knows that when you're talking to the cops or, like, the state, like, you just don't, you're not forthcoming, you know. But there was something about, like, I don't know if the guy tripped me up. I really don't know too much about what happened. But for some reason, I heard myself telling him that I drink until I pass out or I drink, you know, I'll have, like, 14 or 15 drinks before I stop drinking. I heard myself saying the words. And I was, like, trying to grab the words back out of the air, because, you know? And he just started, like, writing stuff down and nodding his head and stuff like that. And we got done, and he's like, all right, so I need you to go to AA. And I was really, really upset, you know, because there was, in my mind, right, alcoholism was about external things. Alcoholism was where you lived, you know, probably under a bridge. How often you showered, probably never. What your relationship with other people was like, you got a divorce and illegitimate children, you know, that's what I knew an alcoholic to be. I mean, I had no idea that that alcoholism is defined as my reaction physically with alcohol. Like when I put alcohol on my body, there's some kind of reaction where I crave more. You know, I crave the second drink more than the first. I crave the sixth drink more than the fifth and on and on and on. I didn't know that. And I didn't know also about alcoholism that there's like this peculiar mental phenomenon where even though I have bad experiences with alcohol, I could list 100 things that have happened that were negative, bad things that happened when I drank. But after a few days or something like that, after a bad bend, when I said I would never do it again, it would just take a few days before I would say to myself, well, this will be different this time. You know, I mean, why couldn't I do that, you know? And that doesn't happen to most people, right? Because, like, there's nothing tangible that comes from drinking alcohol. There isn't money that falls out of the sky. I don't get superpowers, you know. So if there's troubles that are there's problems in my life because of this thing, why would I keep doing it, you know? And there's just something wrong with me mentally. But I didn't know that stuff, right? I thought it was all external. So, you know, I was real mad, and I was like, probation's all about money, and AA is just on a scam with the state of Florida. They want money from me. They pass around this basket every meeting. They just want my dollars. And it just wasn't okay with me. And so the thing was is I had 6 months to go to 10 meetings. It wasn't 10 meetings a week or anything like that. And nothing strenuous at all. And what happened was, is in this 6 month period, I had to go piss in a cup once a week, and so there was a lot of stuff that I wasn't doing anymore. But in Bill's story, in the big book, he makes mention of, you know, crossing some invisible threshold where at one point in time, although he drank very heavy, there was still a marginal amount of control here and there. You know, if he knew that there was something coming up, he could, like, curtail drinking and stuff like that. But somewhere along the line, he passed this invisible threshold where that wasn't an option anymore. It says liquor ceased to become a luxury. It was now a necessity. And I could relate with that when I read it, because in this six-month period, that's what happened. There was a lot of stuff I wasn't doing. I drank all the time, you know. Not like a couple hours before I had to go give this lady my urine. You know, that was the only time I didn't drink. And so real responsible kid, I waited until it was like literally the last week that I was on this program. And the lady kept telling me every time I went in, she's like, you know, you have to go to the meetings, right? And I was like, you know, right, I understand. And I didn't know that I could just forge the paper, right? So, like, maybe I shouldn't say this, but if you're here because of a court program tonight, this is an anonymous program. They don't call us, right? So you can just forge the paper if you want to. There's no, like, double-checking of anything. And I didn't know that. And so I went to these 10 meetings, and there was a meeting house right down the street from where I lived. And I should tell you guys, you know, like, part of the reason that I wasn't homeless, you know, is because I never left my parents' house. Real successful kid. Part of the reason that I had never, like, been divorced, like, I thought alcoholics should be divorced. Part of the reason because I could never even land a date, let alone, like, get married to somebody. Like, real, like, high standard stuff. And so I went to all 10 meetings in this 1 week. And I'll never forget. It was like a place where you could still smoke in the club, and the people there were just like, I don't want to knock it, but I mean, they were talking about, like, I was pissed because my lawnmower didn't start today, and I was just like, God, this is terrible, you know. And it was just like the worst hour of my life, and I didn't smoke at the time, but I left the place smelling like I did smoke, and I was like, God, this is terrible. And I called my mom. I mean, I barely made it out the door of the meeting, and I called my mom on my cell phone, and I was like, Mom, you're going to be so happy that I'm not alcoholic. And I was like, these people are so miserable. You know, it's got to be, like, the worst thing to be alcoholic. And I'm not sure who I was trying to fool, her or me. You know, one of us was getting fooled out of that conversation. And so at any rate, so I got off of the deal with the probation thing. And, you know, shortly after that, I moved out of my parents' house. Like, I was making big strides in life. I got off probation. I moved out of mom and dad's house. And I'll tell you, like, things got real, real crazy. You know, I was 19 years old, and I drank so heavily that, you know, usually the first thing I did every single day is I would wake up still just blasted from the night before. I never really ate too much because all my money went to drinking. And I would just get up out of bed, and I would vomit stomach bile up, like highlighter color, you know, bright yellow. I got yellow coming out of my mouth, and I got, like, red coming out the back, and I got, like, brown coming out the front, you know, just like organs were not working right on the inside, and it was just colors were in inappropriate places. And it wasn't good. It wasn't anything good. And, you know, so I couldn't work real well, and I couldn't go to school real well. Dropped out of college 5 times, and, you know, so just things weren't good. And my problem, I was still, so, like, I moved to Tampa when I was 12, and at the time I was 19, so this is 7 years later. I was still convinced that my problem was Tampa. I was absolutely convinced if my parents had let me stay in Los Angeles that I would live a different life. And, you know, even when we came here, I had an aunt and uncle that lives in San Diego, and I asked my parents if I could live with them instead of coming to Florida. And, of course, they said no, like responsible people. And I just held on to it, like, why wouldn't you let me move to San Diego? Why am I here, you know? My problem is Tampa, Florida. My problem is that my parents are losers. Why they won't let me do anything at all. My problem was always out of here, you know, like somewhere out there was where my problem was. And I never could work, and so by this time my parents had moved up to Buffalo, New York, and you know, my mom didn't want to see me living on the streets, so there was like 3 months in a row they paid my rent, they were paying my cell phone, they were putting money in my account so I could get food. which was obviously not going to food. You know, I'm like selling stuff at the pawn shop just to, you know, to make extra money. And like, you know, they knew what was going on. You know, they're not dumb people. And so my dad called me one day and he was like, "Look, we're not going to pay for you to live like an asshole. If you can't live on your own means, you're going to move back home. It's going to be cheaper for us." And so like at that time, my options were be responsible or go move back home with mom and dad. I'll let you guys know I didn't choose being responsible. And so I went and lived up there. And I tried really hard. I mean, in all sincerity and honesty, I really wanted my life to be better. And I really was giving this thing a shot. You know, 19, 20 years old, and I'm already trying, like, I just got to eat healthy. I just got to exercise. You know, I'm going down to the community college today, and I'm going to enroll, you know. And I'm going to do the laundry today. I'm going to do that. I'm going to go grocery shopping. And like those, I was just trying to get the wheels turning. You know, I knew like for a fact if I could get the wheels turning that things would just be okay. And, you know, where like when I got sober this time, I related to the part in the Big Book where it talks about the guy who's at the roadside place trying to sell a car and he puts the shot of whiskey in a glass of milk. When I read that, I related so much to that because I never drank whiskey and milk. That's gross. But I before I moved up to Buffalo, I was on this kick, and I hadn't drank at all in like a week, right? I mean, maybe not that long, but days had gone by where I had not drank, and I was just on this kick, man. Like, I got to be healthy, and I was taking a vitamin every single day, and I was eating three meals, and I was trying to, like, exercise. We had a little gym at the place I lived, and I was really, really doing good. But one morning, I woke up, And it was just the feeling where things were going to be different this time. And when I made my breakfast that day, I made scrambled eggs and orange juice. And I looked at the glass of orange juice, and I was like, man, if I just put some vodka in that orange juice, everything will be fine because I'm still eating healthy, you know? And it's just like that's crazy. That's like whiskey and a glass of milk crazy. Like, the guy thought that the whiskey wouldn't get him drunk because he was eating a full meal. You know, and that's just absolutely crazy. And so that's just where I was at. And so I really was going to give this thing a try when I moved out of Tampa. And I went from having no job and being a loser here to having two jobs up there. I worked at two different restaurants. And I think I probably honestly went like 3 weeks, maybe a month, without drinking, without doing anything. And I started getting paychecks coming in. And I was working 70 hours a week, so I was too busy to spend any of the money. So my bank account's getting bigger. And all of a sudden, I look one day, and I got some money, and I had started to talk to some people there. So I got friends, and I got money, and I'm in a city that I never partied in. And, you know, things were just going to go crazy. And last call in Buffalo was 4 a.m., and, you know, so I just went out one night. And it was going to be just one night, and obviously it was not just one night. I lived up there for 10 months before my parents threw me out, told me never to come back, and, you know, left there with a lot of wreckage. And so I came back down here. I was 21 years old, hopelessly defeated. I was supposed to stay at my sister's couch for a couple weeks, so I got myself in order. I stayed there for 2 years. And, you know, just like the cycle of it is alcoholism had totally eaten up my life. And I don't want to say alcohol because that gives alcohol a bad rap. I think alcohol is a great thing for normal people. Normal people want to drink it, that's great. You know, but alcoholism had just totally ravaged my life where I didn't have anything to hope or dream for. And my normal routine was, I was staying in this little room in their house, and there was like a bed in there. You know, there wasn't much else. There was a bed and a ceiling fan, and every morning the normal routine is I would wake up, but I would wake up in my brain like a split second before my eyes cracked open, and every morning the split second was the same, and it was just I hope I'm not awake. Hopefully I'm just dreaming that I'm awake. Today is going to be tough. Just so unbearable, you know. And then my eyes would crack open, and I would just look at that damn ceiling fan every morning, and I hated everything. I mean, it was just total despair. And I was really like lost in this purgatory, you know. I was like vacillating back and forth between like, well, I got to kill myself, and like, but I really want to stop drinking and I want to clean up my life, but I couldn't stop drinking and clean up my life because I was totally powerless over alcohol. And so like, I got to tell you, I mean, if you're sitting in this room, suicidal thoughts are not a prerequisite for Alcoholics Anonymous. That doesn't have to happen to you in order to be a member here. But if you're in the world of, like, I have to stop drinking and things have to get better right now because this is unbearable, but for whatever reason, you can't get moving that way and you still drink even when you don't want to and you make promises to yourself all the time and you still keep drinking after that, if you're lost in that terrible world, there's, like, a real solution to that in AA. And I always thought that real solution was I drive a hunk of crap car, I need a new car. And I live with my sister, I need my own place to live. And I have bills to pay. I had a job, and I would eat like a couple times a week. And one of the guaranteed times a week I would eat was on Fridays before the cleaning crew went and emptied out the refrigerator, and I would go in and eat people's leftover potato salad. You know, like, I need money in my bank account, I need a new car, a place to live. I had problems with this girl, like, I need her to come back. And so, like, if you're anything like me and you're lost in that purgatory, those seem like viable options, right? Like, if I can just fix out here, everything will be okay. And really, the opposite is true. Out here doesn't mean a damn thing, you know, just as much as, like, living under a bridge doesn't make anybody more or less alcoholic than someone who lives up in the mansion. You know, like, if we got a problem with alcohol, we got a problem with alcohol. And so, like, the real solution that we offer here comes from the inside out. So, again, if you're lost in that world, there is hope here. This is a place where that will go away, and I can promise you that. That's not just my experience. There's, like, millions of people in AA, so you're probably not special. But at any rate, so stuff was bad, right? And real long story short, I'd gone up to Buffalo to visit my parents over a long weekend, and things went bad, and, so I came back down here, just it had to happen. And I kind of let the cat out the bag up there that I couldn't stop drinking, and it wasn't really any, like, news to them, my parents. And my dad's boss's wife actually had been sober in AA for, like, 10 months, a year, or something like that. And I didn't really know that, but he was like, I don't know what to do with you, you know, like, I can put you in rehab if you want to, but just call this lady, you know, I mean, she can maybe take, you know, help you out and stuff. And so I said, okay, that sounds good and whatever. And I came back down here, and I still tried to manage it. You know, a month later, I finally broke down, and I called the lady, and she took me to my first meeting this time, because, like I said, I've been AA before. And I'll tell you what impressed me the most about AA is I couldn't tell you what happened in the meeting. There was a lot of, older women there, so I stood out. And people looked at me and stuff. And I couldn't tell you what happened at the meeting. There was an awkward moment at white chip time, you know, where people kept nudging me and stuff. And but really, what really, really, really impressed me about AA was after the meeting, right? And we're talking about a mom, a wife, lady that ran her own business. Like, lady has stuff to do with her time. And after the meeting, we went out to her car. She bought me a big book and a 12-12. And we just sat in her car and talked. And she didn't talk to me about, like, yeah, your parents called me and told me you're a loser. And, you know, she didn't say any of that stuff. Really, she didn't say anything about me. All she said was, like, yeah, so, you know, like, I understand people that come into AA usually aren't, like, successful in life. Like, and then she told me all about herself. You know, she said, this is why I decided to come to AA. Here's the things that were happening in my life. And since I've been in AA, I did X, Y, and Z, and the results I got were A, B, and C. And she's like, and she just kind of told me that stuff. And but then she told me, she was like, you don't even have to, like, take my word for it, though. Don't believe me. Here's some of our literature. Like, here's this blue book. If you don't believe me, just read some of this book. And if you find that you can relate to the book, then this is probably a good place for you to be. And so, of course, I had to go home and read about it because I was interested. My life was in bad enough shape where I was, willing to check it out. And like I said, I read Bill's story. The guy was a millionaire. He lived in New York City and Wall Street and all this stuff. And I never had any of that stuff. I've never even been to New York City on a vacation or anything. Never had more than $20 in my bank account. And so I couldn't relate to any of that. But I knew the way that he talked about wanting to not drink, but how he just couldn't, like, muster up the strength to get past that. And I knew what that feeling was like. So I didn't fall in love with AA. I just decided to go to a second meeting. And that second meeting turned into she hooked me up with, you know, this guy who actually knew some people at this group. And a couple meetings later, he took me to this group. And people came up and approached me, and they were friendly and wanted to be friends and stuff. And that was awesome because I didn't have too much of that going on. And this is a group that's real big into sponsorship and service and, you know, cool stuff like that. And people kept bugging me to get a sponsor. And again, I don't have I have bad ideas. I don't know how to fix things in my life, but I think I do. And so my idea with a sponsor was BMW, hot wife, lives in my part of town, so he can like take me to meetings. Even though I had a car that worked, I wanted him to take me to meetings. And that was like my criteria. Oh, had to be sober like 5-10 years or something like that. Like well-respected member of AA. And I went to ask this guy to sponsor me because he kept bothering me about it. And he said no, that he wouldn't sponsor me, but that he had just got done working the steps with somebody, and that guy needed to work the steps with somebody else. So that was going to be who my sponsor was. And I was like, whatever, I get it. And I swear to God, the guy that was my sponsor had just been in a motorcycle accident. So not only did he not have a BMW, guy didn't have shit to drive. And like half the skin was gone on his face, you know? And I was just like, damn, really? You know, like, I thought it was like new guy trick. You know, I didn't give the right secret handshake to get the good sponsor with the hot wife and stuff. But I'll tell you, like, the guy, what's important is that the guy was totally equipped with everything to alleviate alcoholism. The guy was totally equipped with, he was alcoholic himself, right? And he had the knowledge of, you know, what we do in AA, which is the steps, you know, and like the traditions and stuff. So he had working knowledge of the steps and the traditions via the big book, and so he could show me where the solution was. And that's all that's required, like, right? I mean, a BMW doesn't mean too much, and but he had that stuff. And so, you know, we started working the steps, and what he told me, he's like, go read this, you know, these chapters in the book, and then we'll get together and we'll read them together. And then as we were reading that stuff together, you know, when we came to a step, we would work it. And the first step was like pretty easy for me. I mean, I got it. Like, I can't drink real well, and everything's wrong in my life. And like, I've never really been one for like a belief of anything greater than myself. I'm very much like a control freak. I will do everything for everything. But again, I was in such a bad spot. Like, I was willing to just throw the dice and give like this higher power thing a shot. And I was really like kind of messed up too, because I thought God meant like I had to proclaim, you know, like some kind of a church entity thing. And that's not what we're selling here. You know, what we're selling here is, you know, you get your own. Like, you get to make up a personal relationship with your own power greater than yourself, and that's the deal. And so, you know, I got in with that. And as basic of an idea of it as it was, not that, like, I feel like everybody has to have a label for that, whatever that power is, but the only thing I could come up with was, like, I knew the planets revolved around the sun, and I didn't have anything to do with that. Like, if I died today, if I died right now, the planets would still revolve around the sun. And I was like, so that must be, like, that's a power greater than myself, because it doesn't need me. So, like, it was just that basic idea that I needed to know that the world would operate just fine without me. And, you know, so we started writing out this inventory thing. And, like, obviously there was stuff I left off of it that, you know, we had to cross, like, at a later date, because I, you know, I was afraid to tell the guy. And, you know, like, after we wrote that inventory, we officially had a list of, like, defects of character, you know, which means that problems in my life that it just, like, it quantitates what problems are in my life. So I can actually look today and say, like, wow, I'm a selfish guy, and here's where I acted selfishly. And I can kind of keep track of this kind of stuff. And so we looked at that stuff, and, you know, he had me start making amends. And I wish I hadn't spent as long talking about, you know, my drinking, because I have really just terrific amends stories. I will tell you that when I graduated high school, okay, I got an 820 on my SAT. They give you 400 points for filling out your name. When I was in 11th grade, the principal told me I would not graduate. My GPA was too low, and I had to get straight A's my entire senior year. I needed a 2.0, and I got a 2.1, right? So this is what I was equipped with, was never going to get into any college. And I'll tell you that today I attend a four-year university. I got an associate's degree in Alcoholics Anonymous when I was sober, not because I'm a great altruistic guy, but because I went to go make an amends, and the guy said, if you want to make it up to me, you need to go get a four-year degree. So, I mean, amends have brought that into my life, and I had amends to make to my sister, and shortly, like 3 months before I got sober, she had had a daughter. And so our thing was, we were going to get together every Saturday, no matter what, just hang out as brother and sister, because she never had a brother before. And so we started doing that, and like the cool byproduct was, is now my niece is like 6.5 years old, and her and I are just the best friends ever, man. Like, you really couldn't ask for anything more. And it's crazy. She actually, like 2 hours ago, hustled me for the first time ever in her entire life. I have very mixed emotions about it. Half of me is proud of her. Half of me is resentful that a six-year-old schooled me. I just don't know now, like, when I leave, is she crying because she misses me or because she wants me to stay around and play with her and she's just, like, pulling one over on me, you know? No idea. Very confusing. But that's great. You know, those are all really, really great stuff. And, after I was sober, I got to meet a great girl. We actually got engaged on Saturday, which is pretty cool. It's pretty neat. I had problems showering before I got sober, and now I got a fiance. So way cool stuff. But that's not everything that recovery is about. Alcoholics Anonymous, to me, at least personally, is about abstinence from drinking, and most importantly, living a happy life. Because there are days that I've not drank in my past, and it was just the absolute most tumultuous, treacherous days of my entire life. But I just live happy and free and cool today, and everything is all right. But that's not the end of the story, because all that stuff takes work. I've never met anybody that came into AA and just magically everything was fine after that. A couple years ago, actually on my fourth anniversary sober, the same day, I got fired from a job because I was committing fraud, and I was talking to, like, sitting across the table, like a big mahogany table, with this attorney who was talking about felony charges. You know, like, there's just stuff you can't do when you're sober. Like, even though you're sober, you cannot steal, like, credit card numbers and social security numbers. It's unacceptable regardless of your sobriety. So there's absolutely mistakes that can be made, at least in my sobriety. And so it's just very important to me. The guy that I worked the steps with first, you know, like, after we did a bunch of amends and stuff, and he told me that it was important to work with newcomers just as he had done with me, freely of his time, and just like the lady did with me, you know, at the meeting she took me to, just give freely of time. I don't have enough money to help anybody out financially, but I have time that I can offer to people who want the solution. I think that's really cool, because that's a lot of what AA is about. You know, if Bill hadn't taken time out of his life to go visit with Dr. Bob because he knew that was the answer, we'd all be screwed, you know? Like, if AA didn't exist, there's, like, 100 people in this room that would be having a tough time right now. You know, it's big stuff. So I used to like speaking all the time. I don't anymore. I don't know what the deal is, but I'm happy either way. Mark asked me to come tonight, and I've enjoyed being here with you guys. Thank you.